From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 205 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are looking back at the 2010s, the 2010s, the big 2010s.
The teens.
The 2020s.
Is that the aughts? What do they call it?
The aughties.
That was the one before.
Oh, the before. Okay.
The teens. Yeah. We're the teenies. Anyways, I'm your host, Nick, and today I'm joined by...
Sir.
And Kyle.
It's the three amigos today. We're each going to give out a few awards for our favorite things. But 2010s? Seemed all right. Nothing bad happened.
Nothing at all.
No. Cool.
Speaking of nothing bad happened.
On to the 20s.
For one of my lists, I almost did gaming moment. Game moment. Like sports. I don't know why I said sports. But like, yeah, sports moment.
In the 2010s?
Yeah. And I was like... What would be higher up on your list, the home run in Game 7?
Roger Davis.
Or just the Cavs winning it all? Because it would be actually pretty close.
Man. It would be closer than LeBron blocking the Iguodala shot is just...
Yeah. Or what's-his-face's three-pointer?
Yeah, Kyrie's.
Kyrie's three-pointer.
The blocked shot, though, like a three-pointer, I mean... It's like obviously an important basket, but it's just a basket. But yeah. running faster, like I did the math, he actually ran 200 miles per hour.
In those two steps, he ran.
And he blocked a shot that's just like...
That was faster than a bullet.
How could you ever face the world again after being destroyed in such a way that... Iguodala was destroyed by LeBron James at that moment.
In that situation, in a sporting moment like that, though, I always think that even though it's really, it's a huge fail. However, he was moving at 200 miles per hour. Anyone would have been crushed by that. Like,
fair.
I'm always kind of like, I think it says more about the achievement of the winner than it does.
Yeah,
about
I guess that's true.
The humiliation
you're right.
Still it still his face. Now it is still a fail. Yet
it is kind of like a, what do you want me to do?
Yeah,
like, this is LeBron James.
LeBron James
sprinting with all his might. Like there's no going back from that. Mm-hmm. The Rajay Davis one would have been my number one if they had ended up winning that game.
Oh, no. No, in the moment, it was...
Oh, in the moment. Yeah,
I mean...
In the moment.
Yeah.
Yes. But especially because that was against, like, Aroldis Chapman, who's, like, a legendarily good reliever.
Yeah.
And it was a hitter who's not very good.
It's just crazy how close those two things were because of the outcomes.
And Aroldis Chapman is a giant piece of shit.
Yeah.
So just everything about it was great. But, you know, they ended up losing that game as opposed to the Cavs winning.
Stinks.
So, yeah.
I mean, my favorite sporting event we talked about last.
Boston.
The Duke getting beat up?
Yeah, that definitely has some bearing on the decade, considering, you know, one of the things that we discuss, I'm sure we'll discuss, is the election of a very unpopular president. The only the third president to be impeached. Donald.
Oh, you meant Trump.
Donald Trump. joining the ranks of Andrew Johnson and Nixon.
Clinton.
Well, not Nixon, no. Nixon resigned before getting impeached because he didn't want
to. Trump is only the second president who was friends with Jeffrey Epstein to be impeached.
Yikes.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Well, yeah, that was my favorite. Did you see
the thing I put on Twitter the other day?
Yeah, I did.
My poem?
Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't.
It was Roses Are Red, The Elf's on a Shelf. This Christmas, remember, Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself.
I love every single one of those.
And isn't it interesting that...
Is that culture
one thing that we can all agree on?
Yeah.
Is that the one unifying principle in America right now?
Well, it's funny how
didn't commit suicide.
How meme, like, two things that are funny about that is, one, how meme culture has really, like, kept that in the discourse, whereas other things have, like, come and gone so fast, but it's still talked about constantly, just because of dumb memes online. Mm-hmm. But I've also seen, like, the meme where it's the two guys, like, doing the high five hand thing. Mm-hmm. It's like things we agree upon, and it's like leftists, conservatives, Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself.
Yeah.
Like it's the one thing we can agree on.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, I don't know. The decade was all right. In terms of art, there was a lot of good
in stuff. Terms of, yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like, in my estimation, I think it was an overall win.
Yeah. We saw the creation of 4K, right? 4K, when did that start? Like, just the last...
I don't know when it started, but it was definitely popularized. Yeah. TV kind of went from, you know, there was a couple good prestige shows to now every show was a good prestige
and
show.
And that's opened up a lot around... I kind of noticed most of the, like this year's content, 2019 was strong for, like, television. For, like, those prestige one-hour-longs. Like, yeah. It had some of the best and most influential and important content come out. Where we had that content come out on streaming, which was, like, really huge.
Virtual reality, too.
Yeah.
Virtual reality came up. Streaming in general, I think, is, you know, that's that's a major...
An omnipresent.
Yeah, an omnipresent thing now that we didn't have.
Now they're doing games. That's going to be crazy when they do that.
Yeah, and that's just changed everything. You could say maybe that Netflix is the kind of driving force behind that. The thing. You could easily give an award to Netflix for just being one of the most important platforms of the decade.
But they're not as big.
There's nothing to give it. We are the only ones that could give that to them, and we're not going to do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it
because you know they're soulless.
Why would I? Although they did do The Irishman, so
that's the thing. They released a lot of great stuff, and they've changed it. They've changed everything about how we make content. Mm-hmm. I mean, even like creators now.
I mean, Scorsese couldn't get The Irishman made anywhere else, so he's like, "Well, fuck it. If you guys want to give me the money, let's do it." And if not for them, we probably wouldn't have that movie. So,
and what does that say going forward? I'm thinking about projects like one of somebody called on Twitter for let's have Guillermo del Toro make At the Mountains of Madness with the Netflix. Like, it could, stuff like that could theoretically happen, which that's a game changer, like beyond without doubt. Like, that's huge. I mean, Disney Plus releasing on streaming is big. Yeah, they're following Netflix.
So that's all good. The Nazis is bad, I would say. That's like one of the worst things.
Nazis? About this last decade.
Yeah.
Nazis coming back in force, yeah.
Yep.
Which, I mean, let's call it what it is, you know. That's Trump.
Yep. Well.
Well.
I mean, Trump is not the cause, but a large symptom of it, I would say.
Yeah. I think he definitely kept it, like, he kept that movement going. Because the rise,
couldn't have been elected without that being a thing.
Exactly. Like, the resurgence of right-wing groups had actually already started before he took office.
Yeah, but he definitely, there was a big snowball effect. So, you know, there's work to be done.
Yeah, I think one of the shittiest things about that is... you know, I saw it written as both sidism in the media. just this idea that we have to give voice to opposing concerns when one of those like opinions and concerns has to do with genocide against other people and things like that. Like, we don't need to give a platform to both of those. And I think that hopefully moving forward, the media, which I doubt. In the next few years, we'll realize that that's not part of their duty.
Yeah, not optimistic, but
nope,
we'll see.
Not at all.
Well, like the MCU is a big thing this year. We talked about.
Yeah,
like,
are we still kind of in art too? Because I mean, socially, there's a. Yeah, I don't want to get ahead of my list.
Yeah, but that was like a really significant way, just in terms of how movies are produced. They're a lot more production by committee.
Yeah.
So that was a big thing that wrapped up this year. This year was like. As the decade ended, that wrapped up. Game of Thrones wrapped up. The Skywalker saga is wrapping up, like, as we speak. So there were a lot of big properties that all kind of, like, came to a T just within the last few months.
And that's another thing that my list touches on is how a lot of these properties have been continued. I mean, 2019 was huge for that. So we had, I mean, we talked about the Twilight Zone was one. The Joker coming out, like just this idea of either, which I mean, I think maybe the Joker isn't a good
example
of a direct sequel. We had MIB come back. I'm just thinking of like the amount of projects this year that were like direct sequels or like we had Shaft.
I thought you just meant it's not that good. And I was like, yeah, no, it's not that good.
Yeah. We just had like so many things that are either direct sequels or trying to follow up to things that are really old.
Yeah. Very few things were original properties.
Yeah. Which, I mean,
it was Us. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. And just even on like streaming. I looked at the debut television series for 2019, and it was a lot of properties that were either rebooting themselves or kind of direct sequels.
Yeah. You guys want to jump into awards?
Surely.
Kyle, what was your...
So we're doing three different awards?
Yeah.
My first award is heart-pounding or nerve-wracking movie moment of the decade. Number three goes to The Party Night in Hereditary. I don't want to get too much into that, but pretty much after the party.
Yep.
The intro to Gravity. And the rug scene in Room is my number one. Which is interesting because Gravity was the only one that I saw in theaters. And I've heard that that movie like shines there. But
I've watched it recently, and I really like that movie.
Yeah, it's incredible. But yeah, I just remember all of these scenes. Like the one in Hereditary is interesting because it's not really a build up. It's just a moment that you're reacting to, and you feel gross after it for a while. So it's like a reverse nerve wracking moment. But yeah, it's a lot of really intense things happen this decade, but those are the there's way more that I could think of, but these were the first ones that like really were like, yep, these put me on edge. So sir, would be your first category?
Well, I think the first, we talked about best like favorite sporting event. I think the Cavs winning,
yeah.
Like biggest non-political social moment. What would I call this? Like, oh God. Like,
yeah, what a big like deal. Apolitical.
Yeah, just like just moment that most people shared that, like, everybody could basically agree on, and
it was
the Cavs winning.
It was the first time in our lifetimes, in our parents' like memories, at least, of Cleveland winning anything.
Anything at all, really, yeah.
And it was by...
There's Stipe, the UFC heavyweight champion.
Oh,
technically,
yeah.
Nobody knew about that, I don't care.
But it was also... It wasn't just, like, a good team full of good players. It was this homegrown guy who everyone loved, and then he left, and everyone hated, and then he came back.
That was the thing. It was the story.
The way he came back, like the prodigal son, like everything about
that, coupled with the decades-long drought of winning, was huge. That it was literally this kind of messiah figure, basically.
Yeah, and it was against this. Pulls it off. It was against this Goliath team who I think had the record for the most wins in a season.
Yeah,
and they were down.
Yeah, they were down 3-1. So it was just so, like...
How many years do you think it'll take before they turn that into a movie? Not a documentary, but a movie.
It's one of those things where if you had that in a movie, it would seem like such bullshit.
I think, like, LeBron has to retire first.
Yeah.
Sporting movies that aren't documentaries are interesting. I can't really, like, think of a recent one besides like
you mean that are based
like
on
money, like
ones?
Moneyball or something. Yeah, but like that was like decades later, right?
No, it was like 10 years later.
I thought it was like in the 90s or 80s.
I think it was like turn of the century.
But yeah, movies like that where they're just like so just well done and about something that's just like so crazy.
Yeah,
Miracle.
Gonna say Miracle is the one that I was thinking of.
Who'll direct that movie?
Who?
Who's gonna direct that thing?
Oh, the LeBron one?
The LeBron movie.
I don't know. It should be somebody from Cleveland.
Yeah.
Who's from us?
Cleveland, though. Yeah, we got to do it.
All right.
We got to do it.
We'll start writing. But yeah, it was a great moment. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the most memorable times was being out. I lived in Cleveland at the time, and people were just, like, literally partying in the street.
Oh, yeah. Like, and it was, like, to say that people were, like, swinging from streetlights and like jumping on cars and like sounds like some like destruction was like there was destruction involved and there wasn't. No, there was, it was like complete peace. It was like, I've never seen a more like just bombastic social moment that was just like pure joy.
Yeah.
Just
it people was
being happy.
Like I remember driving through the busy part of like the east side where I lived and hundreds of people out on the streets, like coming out of bars, mm-hmm. like little kids in the neighborhoods, just mm-hmm. like playing on the sidewalk. And there's all these cops around, and even them, like even they're like not actually policing. They're all just like, "Yeah, man, we did it." it was just such a special moment. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was so fun.
One of the things that Akron's known for, listeners, Akron, Ohio is known for having really aggressive drivers. And like, man, that whole week, it was the friendliest roads. Like, just driving around town. Everyone was so happy and said hi to each other.
It was like driving around Canada.
It was literally like that. Just like friendly people. And wow, man, I'll never forget it. Nick, what's your first award for the decade?
Yeah, my first award, I'm doing best TV show of the decade. Some stuff that I considered Bob's Burgers. I considered Leftovers, which has, I think, the best ending of any show. I'm not counting Twin Peaks because I'm considering that like a limited miniseries or something like that. But that was one of my favorite things. Then we've talked about like Game of Thrones a lot. But my very favorite thing from this decade was Justified.
Interesting.
It's such a well-written show.
It's really, yeah.
It does a really good job of doing this like big bad arc with small stories littered in so that it's not just the main story. I think that Boyd Crowder is one of the best villains I've ever seen in anything. Raylan Givens, Timothy Oliphant's protagonist, is just so cool. He's a cool character. He's a great actor. And then so many of the supporting characters, like the first time I ever saw Margot Martindale was in the show, who's like one of the famous character actors now. Caitlin Dever is the girl from Booksmart from this year. She's been in a few other things lately, but the first time I ever saw her was in this show. It's such a well-written show. The characters are some of the best characters I've ever seen. And I think it ends really well, too.
So, yeah, I was not expecting that.
Yeah. For me to pick that?
I guess, well, now I'm remembering that you talked about it
a lot. I used to talk about it a lot. Like, I haven't watched it in a few years ago, but it was, I mean, Breaking Bad.
I was going to say Breaking Bad would probably be mine, but I don't watch a ton of TV.
Yeah, Breaking Bad.
I think it'd be up there, well, when did Game of Thrones start?
2007, I think. Yeah, 2006,
was
maybe. Like,
was it, I don't think it was that long ago.
Oh, no. 2011.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I got my graduation years mixed up. It was when I graduated, but it was when I graduated college, not high school.
I can say that while I wouldn't give it the trophy, mm-hmm. the diamond trophy, like best of the decade, I don't know what I would say would be a better TV series. I can think of what a better first season is.
Mm-hmm.
Yet,
but overall experience. That's kind of why I'm going
so dominant. Like
that's kind of why I'm going with Justified is because it was strong throughout. Whereas Game of Thrones had so many things that, like entire seasons, that left me cold. Whereas Justified just did not have stuff like
that. Yeah, that's real.
I think the third season is a little bit weaker, but a lot of that is just like they had one villain that I really didn't like. But there's so many great
Sherlock too, isn't that in the decade too? That's a show.
Yeah, Sherlock's pretty good.
But Justified, I think, was six seasons, so it was like, you know, it was over half the decade's worth of time spent with the show, and it's really, really rewatchable, I think. So I had a blast with that show. It's my favorite of the decade. Kyle, what's your next award?
I have best villains, and I guess I narrowed it down to movies because I don't really watch a ton of TV. Number three is Amy Dunn from Gone Girl. Number two is Killmonger. And number one I have is Howard from 10 Cloverfield Lane, just because he's such a crazy, unpredictable, such a strange
that's so great.
Role for John Goodman.
What an awful guy, too.
I don't know why he stood out so much to me, because if you look at lists of people talking about villains of the decade, because there are a lot of them.
I think that's a really good pick, because one of the things I think it's really important for villains, at least to me, is that they're really bad. Like, I think if I'm feeling like I kind of want to be that character, then it's an anti-hero.
Yeah.
And, God, nobody would want to be Howard, I would hope. Like, what a just awful, I mean, yeah. a rapist of the, I mean, I don't know how you could say rapist of the worst kind yet. Just a guy that, man.
Yeah, like, manipulative, and he was also, like, kind of charismatic, at least in the beginning. I know a lot of people, well, when they think about that movie, they think about the end part.
And there's nothing wrong with saying that evil people have charisma and talent. Yeah. Like, I think that's something that we've kind of screwed up in this country, is we equate talent and even money and charisma with, like, a sense of justness or some kind of, like, moral strength. And, like, no, that's just, you know, people can have that and be horrible. I think that's a great pick because of just how, man, he really does remind me of some of the original slasher villains, and just his pure, just like his drive for evil, and I don't know, I think it's great.
And then the Killmonger, a lot of lists had like Thanos like higher up, and I was like, I don't know, I thought Killmonger was way more special, and like more interesting to me. Like you can, people say like, oh, both him and Thanos were like fighting for good, but it's like, I don't know, Thanos like completely wiping out civilizations and planets, and it's like, I don't know,
Killmonger coming from a place of, you know, where he's making a decision that he thinks the universe would be better,
based
on some fanatical religious belief, whereas Killmonger, you can actually say has a personal, it could be experiential basis. Yeah. He has a philosophical argument to make. He's got a lot going on.
Killmonger is almost like the inverse of what we were saying about like the Scorsese on the last episode. Scorsese's heroes in quotes, and then you look at him and you're like, actually, they're horrible.
Yeah,
Killmonger, you're like, oh, he's the villain, but he's not wrong about a lot of stuff.
Exactly wrong.
He's maybe not going about it the ideal way, but he's
got to easily say that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why that movie is so much richer than all of the other MCU movies, because none of them are really approaching anything that's a character that's that layered and thought-provoking.
Yeah, I feel like you don't even get to know Thanos, really. You see backstories with him interacting with his girls, but it's like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's not that interesting to me.
The John Goodman character in 10 Cloverfield Lane also... one of the first, it might have been the first trope we covered all year, gaslighting. He gaslights a lot, and that movie came out around, when did it come out? In 15? 2015?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have it on, I don't know, I don't have it on my list.
It came out like right when gaslighting, it came out in 2016. So, like, right around the time when political figures were, I guess they'd always done it to an extent, but where it just like really started to go over the top.
Yeah.
The
denial of our reality.
Kind of. So I think that is a really interesting parallel. If we like go back and look at it now,
that's a good point. That there's
a white guy
savior complex.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of his propaganda, actually, is this savior thing.
Yeah.
Another guy I almost had on my list was Jake Gyllenhaal's character in Nightcrawler.
what a great movie, too. Like, man, that movie's
I just
good.
Watched Far From Home recently.
Wow, that's good.
He's crazy in that, too.
Yeah. But in Nightcrawler, somebody was saying that they're pretty sure he doesn't blink in that movie, which I haven't gone back and rewatched it since I heard that.
At the same time, hearing that, now I'm like, there could...
It might be true. Which show? Oh boy.
Sir, what would be your next award category?
Well, best superhero movie in 10 years goes to Black Panther, hands down. That's my runner-up. Best sequel project, and this one was like really. I mean, we had so many franchises try to either come back. We had Blade Runner come back, and that's another like 30-year call, right? A lot of projects like tried to reinvigorate themselves. I mean, The Mandalorian, we talked about last year, of course, The Force Awakens and the new trilogy. There was a lot of competition for best sequel project, and I think Watchmen, HBO's first season, is probably the greatest sequel project I've ever seen, and easily of the decade. I think that the difficulty of these projects now is like is tied to how things have changed socially, like some of what we talked about earlier, and that I'll get into in the next pick, is like our conversation about how to include characters of color, LGBTQ characters, how to deal with franchises that have troubling histories and all those things, like that all informs like how we make a sequel now. Mm-hmm. And I think Watchmen incorporates all of our kind of like our progressive understandings, all of our love for the original characters, continuity, and like the importance of continuity, not just like adding in character motivations or things that don't make sense. Like there's a way to do it all, and they pulled it off. What I think is so important about how they pulled it off is one of the biggest pushbacks, at least that I've gotten in conversation, against evaluating some of the social problems with older characters like from the 50s is like, well, there's no way to like do it because it's just the way everybody was and it's too complicated. And no, it's not too complicated. It just takes work. If you're a good writer, you can pull it off. And I think like that the first season of Watchmen proved that just beyond a shadow of a doubt. Like it's such a carefully crafted sequel project. It's a beautiful thing. So definitely check it out. Have you guys both read the graphic novel?
I've read the graphic novel a couple times.
I have.
It's a big deal. Yeah, I mean, and that's what's great about it.
It's coming up on my list. I still have like a few more movies that I want to see from the end of the year, and then we have to resubscribe to HBO and then finish Succession, and then Watchmen is on my list after that.
Just a really great. And then as a TV series, it's the best, and this is like, I actually saw a tweet that I thought this was perfect tweet, that it's the best first season of any television series they've ever seen, which I was like, that's really, really accurate. And that includes Breaking Bad, The Wire, GOT, everything. Like, yeah, they had great overall runs. You couldn't compare the actual, like, series yet. Mm-hmm. However, just first season, maybe Heroes is the only thing that's even close. Because the Heroes first season was dope.
Firefly.
It wasn't that, man. That fell apart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is actually even better than that. Like, considering legacy, considering, like, what they were trying to do, what they were trying to pull off. And yeah, just a beautiful project. And my many hopes that they continue. And this isn't only because the crew liked a lot of my tweets this year. Nick.
Nice. So I've made a top 100 of the decade list for movies. So I'm just going to read all of them. No, I'm kidding. Good. I was thinking, though, about doing, like, is it either, like, Patreon content or bonus content? I could just do them all. Like, I have a mic at home. I could just do it and read off and give, like, a very brief blurb about each one.
Why not?
I'll do it. Should I do it as bonus content or Patreon, or what do you guys think? On-air
meeting.
Honestly,
I think I like our bonus content being kind of...
Will it just be yourself?
Should it be accessible at first? Maybe we'll build up to Patreon then.
Maybe I'll throw it out on Patreon and then we can release it a little bit later.
Yeah, most bonus content comes out like a week or so later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'll do that at some point. But anyways, I am going to read off my top 10, though, of the decade. My number 10 is Parasite, which I mentioned on last week's episode is my favorite movie of this year. My number 9 is Mad Max Fury Road. My number 8 is Her. My number 7 is The Social Network. My number 6 is Paddington 2. My number 5 is Call Me By Your Name. My number 4 is Zero Dark Thirty. My number 3 is Moonlight. My number 2 is Under the Skin. And my number 1 movie of the 2010s is Terrence Malick's The Tree of Life, a movie that we've talked about. I've talked about it a few times on the show. I liked it, but found it kind of pretentious the first time I saw it. And then just the more and more I watch it, the more this becomes the type of movie that I want to see, where it's not really plot driven. It's mood driven, and it's visually gorgeous. It's Emmanuel Lubezki, who did stuff like Gravity. It's that guy in kind of like a suburban setting. And I think the movie says a lot about human nature, and about family, and ultimately to me the movie's basically just about like death and coping with death, and Yeah, it's some of the most beautiful imagery I've ever seen in a movie is in the Tree of Life, and it's a movie that I just love to revisit.
Who is that movie for? Like you said, you when you saw it, you didn't really like it, but maybe because you were expecting something different.
Yeah, because
should you go into this movie like with one kind of mindset or open?
I think when I saw it, the only other Malick movie I'd seen was Badlands, which is just like you can sort of tell it's the same director, but Badlands has a plot and it's you know, it's a crime movie and it's
Badlands is fairly regular.
Yeah, it's I mean
it's very well crafted.
It's great. It's more a crime movie with art house flourishes rather than an art house movie with crime flourishes.
I think to be really kind, you could say that the movie does deal with the overall theme of like what does the outlaw image in America mean and this obsession with youth and all this stuff. Yet every movie about Bonnie and Clyde does that. So
I mean,
this is probably more about the Charlie.
The guy who actually did it.
Bonnie and Clyde. Mm-hmm. However,
but Tree of Life, I don't know. It's almost like I've discovered this like within the last few years that I tend to really like overtly religious movies for some reason. As somebody who is not in any way religious, but Tree of Life, I talked about Ordet recently. The Dreyer movie is another just like that's a Christian movie.
There's also Charlie Starkweather is the name of the spiritual it's Badlands based on. I'm thinking of Paul Schneider's most recent movie.
First
Reform. That's another one.
Schrader.
Paul Schrader.
Reformed. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like other Scorsese's religious movies I really love.
Well, it's an interesting topic.
Yeah. And this is like it's a Christian movie, I think.
I mean,
least the way I'm reading it.
The difference between, the definition of spirituality, mm-hmm. what is spirituality versus an inner life? I mean, it's a universal question. I think that religion shouldn't maintain a monopoly on those things.
Yeah. I just think it's a beautiful movie. It just has like a mood that I kind of, after rewatching it, have really locked into, and now that's kind of like it's my bag now.
Most of
your bag, baby.
Most of the movies on your list I actually have not seen. Under the Skin, I definitely really agree with. So.
Yeah. Oh, baby.
Man, and what a just like straight. I mean, it's so streamlined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean,
there's no fat on that movie at all. It's
of the movies on my list, like Tree of Life, Under the Skin doesn't. It's sort of got a plot, but it's not plot heavy by any means. Call Me By Your Name sort of has a romantic plot, but in Moonlight has like a plot, but all these movies are kind of like meandering. Like,
yeah, their lives.
It's kind of like wandering around in the world. And that's kind of like a big way that my tastes have changed just in the last like 5-10 years. And I think Tree of Life is probably a big part of that, just from how much I really love that movie. So that is my favorite movie of the decade. Kyle, what's your next award?
Games of the decade. I have top five. Number five is God of War from last year, an incredibly cinematic game that if you manage to beat that game without dying, it's just a single take, the entire thing. No loading screens, no anything. And whenever they go into a cutscene, they just swing the camera and you're in a cutscene and then they swing it back around your character and then you're playing again. Number four is What Remains of Edith Finch, a game I talk about a ton. Came out in 2017. Just a lot of micro stories that are all completely different, all heartbreaking, but all really well done and creative. Number three is the first season of The Walking Dead, the Telltale game. Mm-hmm. Pretty much created like in a genre of games, these like choose your own adventure. Incredibly emotional. I remember when I finished that first season, I just sat like to the end credits and just sat there for 10 minutes just like, what just happened? Because it's like it's a really crazy journey of like you think about what happened in the first part of that game in the very end, and it's like, holy crap, these people went through a lot. Number two is Minecraft. That came out this decade, 2011.
Wow.
a game that I find myself sometimes I'm afraid to play it because I'm afraid of getting sucked into it again. And it's not about, it's like, this is the Nick game because it's not about anything. You just like do your own thing. You meander for forever. You create your own stories in that game, and it's awesome. Number one, The Last of Us has to be that. It is perfectly done. This would make, like, it's like you're playing through a movie. It's nobody is safe in it. You meet characters, they get killed, and you're not tied to anything. And it's dark, it's scary, it's funny, it has amazing characters, and it's incredible. And it's about zombies. Mm-hmm. So it has to be The Last of Us. Sir.
Well, how many more? How many? Or
is this the last one?
Well, okay, I've got a couple of.
You got more to say than
I got a couple of runner-ups. Nice. I think, for one, Minecraft, because I thought about best game of the decade. I think Minecraft's the best video game of all time. Like,
yeah, I've been saying that for a while.
How could it not be? Like, that's what's so hard about it. Yeah. It's like, it just is so universal. It's literally a box of Legos. Like, there, it's the updated version. But you never
run out of them.
Yeah, it's like, what can you
do? And you never step on them.
I think the direction that it's going by having, like, the kind of, like, evil villagers might be weird, yet. And then my other runner-up was Best Glitch. Kyle, I kind of wanted you to hear this.
Sorry.
Best Glitch. So we grew up in, like, the video game cheats, like, the cheats era, when you could enter a cheat, and that would have this, like, outsized effect. That changed when achievements happened, because then it was like, if you cheated, you shouldn't be able to.
Yeah, you avoid those.
Dude, something has arisen in the game world that's just so incredible to me. Like, the glitch that, like, so I think when I got Red Dead, there was still an active glitch where you could go into, like, this weird, like, abandoned village and find an unlimited gold bar. And because of the way the glitch worked, you basically, like, I think I amassed, like, $400,000.
So it was a glitch and not just, like, an Easter egg? Like, it was an actual glitch.
Oh,
okay.
And, like, basically there's a lot of Red Dead players that have, like, a shit ton of money by exploiting this glitch that later got patched out. Yet it didn't affect your achievements or anything like that. And it kind of has taken on, at least from what I can tell, almost like this, like, or it's like, those are the players that found that treasure. It, like, really actually has taken on almost a life of itself as part of the story. And, like, there was another one that was in the epilogue that they just shut down. Mm-hmm. That was around for a year that I didn't even hear about yet. I just think that's so incredible, like, that there's this...
Yeah.
It's a kind of thing that it exists within the culture of the game. It's a game about finding treasure and getting rich.
Yeah,
and,
having a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I didn't play that game long enough to, like, find stuff like that. Is it mostly, like, an online thing?
It was, or I mean, that's where I got tipped off to it. Yeah. Was people had found it, and that's the cool. People who'd, like, buy the game and dump 300 hours into it immediately.
Oh, geez,
and
yeah.
They find everything. I think my best moment, though, this is our first, well, that's my last game related. This is our first, like, opportunity to give a Diamond Trophy out of Best of the Decade, so... I think, like, best overall moment is probably the Ferguson riots in 2014, the Ferguson unrest.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, even though, and, like, with that, like, the Black Lives Matter movement and I would even say, like, the Blurred movement, essentially, and this is what that looked like as a black artist. If we go back and look at our episodes before, how much even, like, black-related content did we have before 2014? Like, new content to talk about?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, those movements were very social, and they were very much about social change, social justice, racial justice. Yet, the effect that they had on the black community was cultural. And that's what's been, like, so lasting and important. That's why I would say it's better off... It's actually better overall, depending on where you're sitting. Because the... Like, what's changed is art's changed for us. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a greater acceptance in different industries to, like, hear our voices, to publish those kinds of works, tell those kinds of stories. I mean, I'm thinking about, like, a lot of our picks came directly after the influences of that movement. Like, we wouldn't have a Watchmen, we wouldn't have Get Out, we wouldn't have Us. We especially wouldn't have them talking about those kinds of themes and... That was big. And, I mean, it was just something incredible to be a part of. You know, I think the same way that I feel that the 2016 election was really screwed up, I also feel like 2014 and the ensuing kind of conversation in this country about race and racial justice, inclusion, and what that's meant for all these other movements, even the women's movement, Me Too. Like, that's kind of, we're in an age of really addressing like equity for everyone.
Yeah, I was gonna, there's a lot more accessibility even just the last few years to filmmakers of color.
Yeah,
like speaking just in terms of film, just because that's kind of like my niche, but like filmmakers of color, queer cinema over the last 5 years has been better than, you know, it ever has been, I think.
Yeah. I mean, and it's in storytelling. I'm thinking of the Afrofuturism, like Nnamdi Okorafor, and the Binti series, like things like that. Like this, this is a wave that's been.
Yeah. And I was looking through my top 100 list, and there's still like kind of a dearth of female filmmaker representation. But it's gotten better, I would say. Like, just like as we were talking, I was browsing through it, and most of the movies that were directed by women are more recent, from the latter half of the decade than the first. Like Winner's Bone is up there pretty
yeah
quick, but
and I think like,
but
so
even Deborah Granik made Winner's Bone and then didn't make a movie again for like 8 years or something like that, which is crazy because that movie, like, that was the movie that made Jennifer Lawrence like a huge star. Yeah,
and still our best movie.
And the director got nothing out of that. She made a follow-up movie that was really good, but it was micro budget, tiny budget movie, real quiet drama, because they're not just getting chances, as opposed to like how many terrible movies has Jason Reitman made, and right now he's getting another Ghostbusters right reboot that, like, Christ, we don't need that. We just haven't
made it at all. Yeah. So yeah, I think like it's hard to know what to call it. I mean, some people call it the 2014 movement and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Yet I think specifically its role in art and how it's affected art, I think has been just one of the most beautiful and best things in the past decade, and it's been so great to watch. And it seems like there's so much more coming and permanently changed now that we can't really, you know, there's not going to be any reversal on it. Like, the floodgates are wide open. I think about, like, even Rockstar's Red Dead Redemption 2. For Rockstar to make a game where they basically kind of offer, like, a send-up or a criticism or a kind of a commentary on their own, like, their own gaming history. I mean, that's what Arthur Morgan's kind of an indictment of a bunch of Rockstar characters. For all the flaws or successes of that game, it's definitely them engaging in the conversation.
And
it's just like, wow, it's all around. It's really cool.
There's obviously still progress to be made.
Yeah,
definitely. But I think just not even in terms of the results, but the fact that there's so much conversation about something like that is, it will produce lasting effects for years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a plus of.
Yeah. I think it's an overall plus for the decade.
Yeah,
I think it, for me, it put the decade over for sure.
Yeah, yeah, especially in terms of art. Like, I mean, we could talk about like for geopolitically.
Yeah, we can say negatives, a lot.
But in terms of art, art is getting
more. Maybe we just talked about horror noir.
Yeah, it's getting better and more inclusive.
Yeah, wow. So, that's my that's the best thing that happened. Best moment.
Yeah.
Nick, what's your final award?
My final award is my filmmaker of the decade, and talked about him a lot last episode. I'm going to do it again. At a spry young 77.
Man.
It's Marty Scorsese.
I mean,
let me run down his, I've got a lot written out as to why I'm picking him. So he started off the decade making Shutter Island, which is kind of like a lesser Scorsese work, but I rewatched it last week and it's fun as hell. Like, it's really a blast.
Mm.
And, you know, it's a really good-looking psychological thriller. So that's what he's...
Incredibly loud soundtrack.
Yeah. There's a moment in that movie where, like, mildish spoilers for it, but there's a conspiracy going on. And there's a scene where there's a character who's being interviewed, and somebody asks her a question about somebody who's in the room, but she's, like, pretending that that's not that person. And she just looks off to the side.
Is that? I think I talked about this in Gaslighting, or maybe I mentioned
it in
Gaslighting.
She just looks off to the side, and you could so easily not even notice that she does it. But when you know what happens throughout the rest of the movie, it blew my mind. Like, I rewound it. And I'm like, Nelly, like, look at this again because it's amazing. So he started off the decade with that. Next up, he made Hugo, a 3D kids movie about the importance of film preservation. And it was nominated for a bunch of Oscars and it won Best Cinematography. Then he made Wolf of Wall Street, which is like this big sprawling black comedy biopic about the hedonism of capitalism. And then he made Silence, which is like this quiet, brutal religious drama about suffering and sacrifice and regret. And then he rounds it out with The Irishman, which people are saying it's just another Scorsese crime film, but it's like, it's more like Silence than it's like Goodfellas. It's about death and regretting your life. So he made those five movies. He made documentaries about Bob Dylan, about Elia Kazan, about George Harrison. He produced The Souvenir, which was on, it won my Best Actress award this year. He produced Uncut Gems, which we haven't been able to see yet, but it's the Adam Sandler gritty crime movie that's
supposed I'm to actually be. Thinking about going and that's, seeing that. I found some vouchers to the Nightlight, right? So.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
I kind of want to go see it. That and Little Women, I'm pretty
sure. Yeah, yeah,
when did Adam Sandler turn the corner? Like,
it was probably that song that he sang, the Chris Farley song when he was on SNL.
Yeah. Oh,
it was dark, man.
So he also produced Diane from this year, Happy as Lazaro, Free Fire, the TV shows Vinyl and Boardwalk Empire. He's been working with the Film Foundation to preserve films. They're currently trying to preserve films by Michael Curtiz, who's the guy who made Casablanca, William Wyler, Michael Powell, who's the guy who made Red Shoes, and Fellini. And through his work on the World Cinema Project with Criterion, he's brought movies to, you know, viewers. They're all on Criterion Channel right now, from the Philippines, Thailand, Soviet Union, Brazil, Turkey, Morocco, South Korea, Taiwan, Senegal, Mexico, and Bangladesh. So he's not just making movies, he's making it so that you can see other people's movies from all these different continents. I think it was last year I made a list of my favorite first watches of the year, and one of those was the Philippines release called Insyang, which was the best thing I watched for the first time, and it was because of Scorsese.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to round this out by, he won the Cecil B. DeMille Award at the Golden Globes in 2010. So he was awarded this by the people who gave him the award were De Niro and DiCaprio. And this is what DiCaprio said. He said, "It's hard to believe we've only been watching movies for the last 100 years, while other art forms have been around for thousands. But as we look back in history, there are those names that truly define their own medium. Picasso, Da Vinci, Shakespeare, Beethoven, to name a few. In 1,000 years from now, as the history of film unfolds, there will surely be one name for future generations that is synonymous with master filmmaking in the world, in the word cinema, and that name is Mr. Martin Scorsese." Sure. He's the best. He's been doing this for 40, 50 years, and he's still
the
very top of his game.
I really like that. I think a best of the decade is really it's fitting. Because he really could have easily hung it up.
Oh, yeah.
This could have been it. Yep. You know, and nobody would have, and like Shutter Island would have, basically we would just look at Shutter Island like we look at every other kind of fading director at the end of their career. Like, hey, I mean, a small movie that's kind of good. Yet to roar back with all of his extracurricular stuff and Silence.
Yeah. I mean,
and The Irishman, his Wolf, greatest like, crime film ever, is like
Wolf
ridiculous.
Of Wall Street is not the type of movie you would expect from a septuagenarian,
because
it is, man, it's chaotic. Like, it's so out there.
But I recently watched the drug scene again. Where,
oh yeah, the Quaalude scene.
It's just like the new phase or whatever that he finds.
It's just so, it's so funny, and it's like, it's some of the best debauchery I've ever seen on film, and it's by this guy who's been doing it since the 60s. Like,
yeah,
he's a legend. I can only tip my hat to him. He's the best. I think he's the best living filmmaker right now. And I love him. I love him.
And you ripped the MCU a new one.
Yo, yeah. Like, well, he single-handedly,
and
like,
I still feel like that's just been so misunderstood. Yeah. I mean, because I'm one of the people that essentially agrees with him.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how we don't. Like, and yet I don't think that takes away at all from the Marvel project. I think to me the only thing about like there being so many superhero movies is that Disney owns a monopoly. That's the thing we really don't like. Mm-hmm. If anybody is sitting here acting like for their entire childhood they didn't want to see Thor on screen, why lie to me? Like, we wanted to see it. Mm-hmm. That's okay. It's just the monopoly we don't like. And then I think also it should be pointed out, I don't think it takes away from anything, to say that the stakes in a Marvel movie are much lower than the stakes in, say, a last Black Man in San Francisco or like another film, like a piece of cinema. Like, it really there is a difference. We're watching cartoons. Like, that's what they are. You know, they're basically cartoons, and that's okay. I don't think that even takes away from how they can be good and powerful pieces of entertainment. Yet they're still they're dealing with characters that we know the Black Panther cannot die. In the next Black Panther film, we just know that and even if he does, he's gonna come back, or he's just gonna be replaced, I guess. I don't know, like Shuri or whatever. Yeah, it's not gonna matter. Like, he's gonna be alive in the comics. He's gonna be alive in another part of the franchise. And I think what Scorsese was just trying to point out was that that's a difference from like a piece of cinema.
Yeah.
Somebody said, like, sort of semi-related, is that they said Rian Johnson is a good director. J.J. Abrams is a good producer. And they make different films because of it. Like, noticeably different.
I think that's movies. Right.
Yeah.
I think I would give best first decade, of a director's career to Coogler. Fruitvale Station, Creed, Black Panther.
I never saw Fruitvale Station. So.
Three solid hits, though. That's pretty good. Who else had that kind of resume?
What order would you put those in? Black Panther, Fruit?
Man. I mean, I think Black Panther is just
such
a... To me, that the hallmark of a great director is being able to... You're basically steering a ship. Like, you're a captain. You've got all these different personalities. The crew members are supposed to do different things. And what he was able to bring out of the costuming, the music, just everything in that movie
is so perfectly coordinated
to be the director and to do all that. That to me placed him in the same ranks of your Scorsese's and you know, the Del Toro's and guys like that. I mean, what does Herzog say, that being a director is like cooking a meal or walking on foot? Walking on foot.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, okay.
It's one of the great philosophers of our time. I still believe that. Yeah. So I went through, for those who aren't in the know, you can find this on TV Tropes, JDMF, John Duncan Motherfucker, compiles lists from our show. So our top fives and our mentions. So when things get mentioned on the show, it shows up in those notes. So we didn't have a complete list, but we had... way over half of our episodes in this Excel spreadsheet, like probably closer to three quarters-ish of our episodes on the spreadsheet. And I went through and kind of looked at the things that seemed to come up the most, like which had the most mentions by us. So, Kyle, what video game do you think came up the most?
This decade or...
Yeah, like throughout the show, not counting like maybe the first 40 episodes. It's already been mentioned.
What remains of Ethan Finch?
Huh?
The Last of Us?
Last of Us.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was one of those two.
That had 25 mentions.
I thought it'd be Minecraft.
The next was PT, actually.
Nice.
Yeah. The book that came up the most, there was really only one book that came up a lot. You guys know.
The Bible?
No. Bible. Ready Player
Harry
One.
Harry Potter?
Ready Player One.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. So neither one of those things. I like. Is The Last of Us on the Xbox?
No.
Yeah, so I can't get it. Like, I'm barred.
I'm gonna save the movie.
Exclusive content. That's been one of the worst things of the.
Great.
Well, it was always around, I guess.
It makes the Xbox not worth it. The lack of exclusive content.
What TV show do you guys think came up the most?
Probably Game of Thrones.
It was Game of Thrones. That was the thing that we mentioned the most by over 20 mentions compared to... Wait. Math.
What about Simpsons, man?
Not as much as these. So, not 20 mentions. What is this? 13.
Or Buffy? Yeah, I love talking about Buffy.
Game of Thrones came up the most. Rick and Morty came up the next most. And then Breaking Bad was just behind that. So those were, like, far and away.
Mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones, nothing. Nothing was coming close to touching that.
Yeah, which, I mean, it ran for 10 years, almost.
Yeah. And then,
can't really, yeah.
Should we get into our Diamond Trophy?
Should probably get into it.
So, leading up to that, I'm going to mention the things that came up, movies that came up the most. The Last Jedi and The Force Awakens. The Force Awakens got mentioned as many times as Black Panther did. Snowpiercer was a little bit more. Mm. It got one more mention. And Mad Max Fury Road got a few more mentions.
I love those movies.
But our Diamond Trophy is going to go to the movie Diamond Trophy Award for Trophy of the Decade.
Mm-hmm.
To the movie that had more mentions than any other movie. And we've already talked about it on the show a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Sir, you want to?
Jordan Peele's Get Out.
Yeah. It, a former Golden Trophy.
Former Golden Trophy.
But, I mean, he's another guy who... Look at the best of the decade. Yeah, that's...
I figured I'd wait till this to talk about it, that, in my opinion, the greatest creator of the decade is Jordan Peele. Because if we count out the Key and Peele show to Get Out to being a star producer... Keanu, of course.
Yeah. Strong. Please. Let's not forget. Keanu's a blast.
I haven't seen it, actually. Yet.
What?
I actually have not seen it, no.
It's pretty good.
I think, like, his skills as a producer are solid. They've shown to be pretty good. A lot of the stuff he's produced. Weird City, fun. A lot of fun.
I really like, I know you didn't like Black Klansman, but he produced that.
I liked Adam Driver in it. I liked a lot of... I actually did like Denzel's son in it too. I loved the acting in that movie. There's so much about it that I did actually like. I think when I reviewed it, I came down pretty hard on it. There's just a lot that's great about it.
He's got to be up there for one of the filmmakers of the decade.
Yeah, and just to, I mean, I kept saying that he reminded me of like an Orson Welles type, and yeah, like the director. I think as auteur, like. I'm worried that the studio system is kind of like, it's really like pushing that to the back burner.
Yeah.
I think what we've seen with movies with like the Marvel kind of structure, I think the hiring of the Russo brothers after like the, not to knock those guys at all. Like I really don't have that strong of an opinion on them. I know that there were times when Marvel followed up an auteur director with a safer bet, and sometimes those guys were the safer bet, and it really kind of seemed for a while that the studio structure was moving away from the idea of director as like artist, as having a voice, as like really a voice in the culture and being recognizable and things like that, and Peele's really bringing that back.
Yeah, that's something I object to about kind of the MCU in general, and like a lot of these blockbuster movies, that they're kind of authorless, which...
Yeah, and it's funny too that the worst thing about Black Panther is that last scene, the fight scene, and we talked about it, I think, on one of the last shows. Supposedly not directed by Coogler. And that is very specifically a Marvel movie, Disney thing, where they have their own second unit directors. Get Out. This really tie. I thought about my best moment, and I think they're so tied together because Get Out had a totally different ending until 2014, and him changing the ending. So the original ending was...
He gets
arrested. And after the kind of 2014 movement, Peele realized that like the culture kind of passed that part of the conversation and that we were kind of ready for a different angle, and that this needed to be a movie with a happy ending for Black people. And just that one decision changes... It's such a great decision for the film.
Yeah.
It elevates that movie... beyond what it would have been without it, you know, and you know, a movie that speaks to the culture that way, in a way that we'll be talking about for years, that changes the culture, That's hard to come by.
I think the original ending would have been too bleak. This movie needs to end with a little bit of hope.
Mm-hmm.
So I think changing it is a much better.
Yeah. And I think just for horror to have, horror is a genre with a trope.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of its most famous tropes is directly about race.
Yeah.
The black character always dies first. And to have a definitive black horror film in this country, I think is about as worth a 10-year award.
It's weird that they never talked about how the daughter in that movie was definitely brainwashed, right?
Yeah. So that was like the big conversation at the time was that
she can't be evil because she's like a pretty white girl.
Which gave us the guileless white woman. Kind of the understanding of that trope.
Yeah. We do have some feedback. This is favorite stuff from Paul in the UK. These are movies that he has seen. These were his favorites. Mm-hmm. 2010, Inception, Toy Story 3, and Social Network. 2011, The Adventures of Tintin. He says, I guess I didn't see a lot of movies this year. 2012, Skyfall, Dark Knight Rises, Argo, and Wreck-It Ralph. 2013, Frozen and 12 Years a Slave. 2014, Grand Budapest Hotel, Birdman, Lucy, John Wick, and Selma. 2015, Spotlight, Sicario, and Straight Outta Compton. 2016, Deadpool and Hunt for the Wilder People. 2017, Get Out, The Big Sick, starring a now-jacked Kumail Nanjiani. Three Billboards and John Wick 2. 2018, If Beale Street Could Talk. And he says, yeah, another year of not watching movies. Beale Street kind of slaps. And 2019, Always Be My Maybe. And he says, needing to watch more movies this year. And then live-action TV that he said he watched, Parks and Rec, The Office, Breaking Bad, It's Always Sunny, Luther, Dexter, Community. Somebody's watching Community. Thank you, Paul. 30 Rock, The Good Place, and Black Mirror.
Oh, so, man. Forgot about Black Mirror.
Yeah. If you guys have your own stuff from the 2010s, send it our way. Where do they send it?
They can send it to onthetropes@gmail.com.
Or facebook.com/onthetropes, twitter.com/onthetropes.
They can hop on Twitter every Saturday at 8 p.m.
Sven Goolin.
To follow us, and we'll be watching The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms this coming Saturday. Well, actually, no.
Oh, yeah, because this will be...
Yeah, we will have already done that. However, yeah, we're still doing that, so meet us on Twitter, and you can disrupt our live tweeting if you feel like it.
Yeah, and head over to Patreon, because I'm going to do this little bonus thing where I talk about my favorite movies of the decade. So that'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I'll have fun.
Man, this coming decade is going to be weird.
Yeah.
My kid will be an adult by the time it's over.
Shit. I don't even want to think about that.
We'll have teenagers.
Oh, fuck.
Snap.
Anyways.
You guys notice my 5 o'clock shadow? Look forward to it. I mean, Nate, you're already working on one.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
I'm,
you know how I'm long that would take me to grow it's that 5 o'clock shadow?
She's going to help.
I'm trying to grow this beard. It's taking a long time.
Yep.
Working on it. The Asians don't.
Man.
We don't beard very well.
We also don't raisin.
Yeah, Asians don't raisin.
Mm-hmm.
Gold don't mold. Black anyways, don't I'm Nick.
I'm Sir.
And Kyle.
Join us next year.
Oh, wait, we're reviewing Event Horizon soonish.
Oh, yeah.
So, watch it.
Cool.
Yeah. Bye-bye.